Welcome to Ekatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Okay, so today we're diving deep, really deep, into a massive work of 20th century American literature. We're talking about Ernest Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Oh, absolutely. A cornerstone, like you said. It's just this incredible blend of, you know, war story, political thriller, love story, and well, a profound look at life and death.
Yeah, exactly. And Hemingway himself, I mean, a Nobel laureate, right? He wasn't just some detached observer of the Spanish Civil War.
No, not at all. He was deeply involved as a journalist, very passionate about the Republican cause against Franco and fascism.
Yeah.
This book from 1940, it really pulses with that experience.
And you can't talk Hemingway without mentioning his style, that famous iceberg theory. People throw the term around, but what does it really mean for this book?
Well, it means what you see on the page, the action, the sparse dialogue. That's just the tip, right? All the emotional weight, the trauma, the love, the meaning, it's mostly submerged.
So he doesn't spell it out.
No, he makes you feel it. He shows you what Robert Jordan does, how he acts, and you, the reader, you have to kind of dive beneath the surface to grasp the full emotional impact. It demands a lot, but the payoff is huge.
Okay, so let's set the scene. We're in the Sierra de Guadarrama Mountains. It's May 1937. Our main guy is Robert Jordan. He's American.
Yeah, an American academic, actually a Spanish instructor who's now using his skills, his other skills, as a dynamiter for the Republicans.
And his mission is crystal clear, but incredibly dangerous.
Right. He has just 3 days, to link up with some local guerrillas and destroy a key bridge. This is supposed to be crucial for a big Republican offensive.
So it's got that ticking clock element, that external pressure.
Definitely. High stakes military objective.
Oh.
But, and this is the core of the novel, really, it's also an internal race against time for Jordan.
That's so.
Well, he starts off as this sort of duty-bound professional focused on the mission, the politics, but facing almost certain death, it forces him to ask, you know, what makes a life meaningful, especially a life about to end?
And this mission throws him together with this this band of guerrilla fighters. They're absolutely crucial, aren't they?
Oh, completely. They're the crucible, as you said. He has to rely on them. And they are, well, complicated.
Let's break them down. Who do we meet first?
First, there's Anselmo. He's the old guide, loyal, dependable. But he hates killing. He embodies this sort of moral struggle within the war itself, a kind of quiet conscience for the group.
Then there's the official leader, Pablo.
Was the leader. By the time Jordan gets there, Pablo's. Well, he's kind of a wreck. The long years of fighting and hiding have just hollowed him out.
So he's cynical, fearful.
Deeply. He sees Jordan's mission as basically a suicide run that's going to destroy the little bit of safety they've managed to find. He represents that corrosive effect of endless violence.
But the real power isn't with Pablo, is it?
No way. It's with his partner, Pilar. She is formidable, earthy, maybe a bit superstitious, incredibly charismatic, and brutally honest.
She's the one who really runs things.
Absolutely. She sees Pablo for what he's become and just takes charge. She's the anchor, the driving force, and becomes this really important figure for Jordan, too.
And then there's Maria.
Ah, Maria. Yes. She's young, and she carries these terrible scars from the fascists. They captured her, assaulted her, shaved her head. Just brutal.
She represents the human cost.
Exactly. The direct physical, emotional toll of the war. And for Jordan, well, she becomes the reason he suddenly desperately wants to live.
Which brings us to Jordan's own journey. He changes dramatically in just these 3 days.
It's incredible, really. He arrives this almost detached intellectual doing his duty for the cause, for the abstract idea of liberty.
But meeting Maria shifts everything.
Completely. This intense, immediate love affair just cracks him wide open. It's not a distraction from the mission. It becomes the mission, in a way.
It makes the political personal.
Fiercely personal. Right. Suddenly, he's not just fighting fascism. He's fighting for her, for the possibility of a future, for this connection he's found. He feels like he's lived a whole lifetime in those few days.
And that makes the prospect of dying
so much more agonizing, because now he has everything to lose.
And for Maria, what does this relationship mean for her?
It's a path to healing, or at least the start of one. She's so traumatized. Finding safety and tenderness with Jordan is like rediscovering herself. He calls her his little rabbit, you know?
Yeah, that sense of needing protection.
Exactly. She embodies that fragility, the innocence that the war is crushing, and Jordan becomes her fierce protector in their little bubble, often just the sanctuary of his sleeping bag.
We should circle back to Pilar for a second. You called her brutally honest. There's that one story she tells.
Oh, yes, the massacre story. It's harrowing. She recounts in graphic detail how the Republicans in her own town rounded up and killed the fascist sympathizers early in the war.
And this isn't just a throwaway anecdote.
Not at all. It's absolutely crucial. It completely demolishes any simple idea that this is a clean fight between good guys and bad guys.
It shows the brutality on both sides.
Yes. The dehumanizing horror inherent in civil war. Paler delivers this raw truth, and it forces Jordan and us, the readers, to grapple with the moral complexities. There are no clean hands here.
Meanwhile, Pablo's journey is going in the opposite direction. Downhill.
Fast. His fear just consumes him. Self-preservation above all else. Which leads him to, well, the ultimate betrayal.
Stealing the detonators.
Right. In the middle of a snowstorm, he steals the exploder box and the detonators. Basically sabotages the entire mission to try and save his own skin.
Does he come back?
He does, eventually. With a few more men, he's recruited, sort of desperate to get back in. But it feels tainted, like a ghost of the leader he once was. Not real redemption. The damage is done.
Okay, let's track the plot day by day. That ticking clock is always there.
Day one sets it all up. Jordan arrives, senses the tension with Pablo immediately. Pillar steps in. And that night, the connection with Maria begins instantly.
Is that when the famous line comes in?
Yes. After they make love, she asks him, almost innocently, did the earth move? It's Hemingway showing the depth, the almost cosmic significance of their connection, even amidst the chaos.
Day two feels heavier, doesn't it? More ominous.
Definitely. They scout the bridge, confirm how difficult it will be, and then Pilar reads Jordan's palm.
And she sees...
death. And clearly, she sees death in his very near future. It just hangs over everything from that point on. It's not just foreshadowing. It feels like fate closing in.
And then something happens that makes it feel even more real.
Yes. The disaster with El Sordo's band, their neighbors, another guerrilla group, they get cornered on a hilltop by fascist planes.
It's brutal.
Horrific. Bombed, then overrun. The fascists decapitate them afterward. For Jordan, hearing this confirms two terrible things. The fascists know something is up, so the element of surprise for the main offensive is gone. And it's a preview of their own likely fate.
Which brings us to day three, the climax.
Everything accelerates. Pablo's theft means Jordan has to improvise a way to blow the bridge using grenades, which is way more dangerous.
But the real gut punch is happening elsewhere, isn't it? With the message.
Oh, the Andre subplot. It's agonizing to read. Jordan realizes the main offensive is doomed without surprise, so he sends one of the guerrillas, Andre's, with an urgent message to General Golis to call it off.
And Andre's runs into bureaucracy.
Bureaucracy, incompetence, paranoia, you name it. He gets stopped at checkpoints, delayed by officers who don't want to wake their superiors, questioned by suspicious political commissars.
So the message is just stuck.
Painfully stuck. While Andres is trying desperately to get through, you know the clock is ticking down to the offensive and to the bridge attack. It's this crushing illustration of how the big military machine can fail the individual soldier on the ground.
Does the message ever get through?
It starts to move, but far too late. The planes are already overhead for the offensive as he finally nears Goltz's. The sacrifice at the bridge is already locked in. It will likely achieve nothing for the larger battle.
Yet, they still attack the bridge.
They do. It's bloody, chaotic, but successful. The bridge goes down, but the cost is immediate. Anselmo, the good old man.
He's killed.
Yeah, by shrapnel from the explosion. A direct hit.
And then Jordan's own escape goes wrong.
Horribly wrong. A shell lands nearby. His horse rears and falls, crushing his leg. He can't move. He's trapped. The fascists are closing in.
This leads to that incredibly powerful ending.
One of the most memorable in literature, I think. Jordan knows it's over for him, but he chooses how it ends. He makes the others go on, especially Maria.
That goodbye scene.
Heartbreaking. He tells her she must live, that she carries their life forward now. That's when he says, I am thee and thou art me. It's about their unity transcending even death.
And he stays behind.
Stays behind, alone, propped up against a tree, leg shattered, waiting. Waiting to ambush the first fascist officer who arrives to buy his friends just a little more time. The final image is his heart beating against the pine needle floor of the forest. He gives his death meaning through that final act of solidarity.
Which perfectly captures that core theme from the title, right? The John Donne quote.
Exactly. No man is an island. Never send to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Jordan embodies this. He, an American, dies in Spain because he believes that a threat to freedom anywhere affects everyone. His death isn't just personal, it connects him to all of humanity.
And love becomes the counterpoint to all that death in politics.
It's the ultimate meaning maker in the novel. The intensity of his connection with Maria gives his final moments and his sacrifice a weight that transcends the failing military strategy or the political ideals, that I am thee and thou art me idea. It suggests love creates a kind of immortality.
The novel also really emphasizes the value of intensity, doesn't it? Because it all happens so fast.
Absolutely. 3 days. Hemingway seems to argue that life isn't measured in years, but in the depth of experience. Jordan finds a whole lifetime, as he puts it, in those 72 hours.
Which makes his thought near the end so powerful.
The world is a fine place and worth the fighting for, and I hate very much to leave it. He found something profound to live for right at the moment he had to die for it. That paradox is what makes the sacrifice so deeply felt.
We should quickly touch on that stylistic thing again, the thee and thou.
Yeah.
It can feel a bit strange to a modern reader. Why did Hemingway do that?
It was actually a really clever way to handle translation. In Spanish, you have the formal you, usted, and the informal intimate you, too. There's no easy equivalent in modern English.
So thee and thou represent the two form.
Precisely. He used those archaic forms to signal intimacy, closeness, familiarity, like between Jordan and Maria, or among the close-knit guerrillas. When characters speak more formally or to strangers, the dialogue reflects that with standard you. It keeps that Spanish social nuance alive in the English text. It grounds you in the setting.
It's quite ingenious when you think about it that way.
Yeah, style serving substance.
So, stepping back from the details, what's the lasting takeaway? What does For Whom the Bell Tolls really leave us wrestling with?
I think it forces you to confront the cost of idealism. It asks, you know, when grand causes get bogged down in failure and brutality, what remains? What is the individual's role, their responsibility?
And maybe it suggests that the answer isn't always in the big victory.
Exactly. Perhaps the answer lies in those individual acts. Loyalty, love, courage, even when facing defeat. Jordan's final choice, Anselmo's quiet integrity, Pillar's fierce honesty. Maybe that's what ultimately defines our humanity, even when the bells are tolling.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekaksha Foundation.